and that sound touches down deep in my heart. She clutches my shoulders as I make love to her. Even though the clock is ticking, even though this won't last long, I take my time in my own way. I savor every sound she makes, every sweet, sexy noise, every murmur, and every sigh. I hike her leg higher around my waist and swivel my hips deeper into her. With my touch, I want to erase whatever sadness she feels. I might have made some bad choices. I might have made some mistakes. But this isn't one of them. She's not going to be my checkered past. She's my present, and she's my future. I know that. I believe that. Because there's sex, there's fucking, there's lust. And then there's this, right now, and it's everything, because I'm so in love with her. In mere seconds, she grabs my ass and calls my name, and I'm right there with her. Our sounds are white-hot noises, wild groans, and intense cries of pleasure as she comes, and I join her in what I hope is the start of something new. While she's in the bathroom cleaning up, I flop down on her bed, thumbing through my phone, and see that my sister texted me. Josie. Sorry, phone took a swan dive into the batter. Anyway, listen. Love is all about taking a chance. It's not rocket science. Just speak from the heart and tell her she's the one. I smile, and a sense of calm floods my body. I can do that. I can definitely do that. Of course you can. Just trust yourself. Your new instincts with her, not the old ones. Promise. I'm a new man. I put my phone in my pocket, take a deep breath, and wait for the woman I love. The sink is running, so she's still in the bathroom. As I stand up, I wander past the TV console. Her phone buzzes on the wood. Glancing down, I see a 917 number on her screen. Someone from New York is calling her. It's not my job to answer it, so I leave it alone, and the buzzing stops. Then it rattles, like the caller has left a voicemail. The sound draws my attention back to the screen for the sliver of a second. That's enough time for the message to flash. It's been translated from voice into text. I should look away. I really should. But I don't. Rhonda Hafner from Hafner and Hickscombe following up on our meeting. I reviewed the information you sent, and yes, you have a reasonable claim. I grab the wall as the floor buckles. What the hell? My head swims and a strange new nausea whips through me. I'm even sicker when I click on my phone, run a quick Google search, and find that Hafner and Hickscombe is an employment and labor law firm in New York City. As panic thickens in my veins, I cycle through our conversations about lawyers. When the Easy Out service fell apart, Natalie mentioned talking to an attorney friend of Charlotte's, someone specializing in family law. She said the woman gave her useful guidance on an annulment versus a divorce in New York. At the farmer's market, we even talked about not needing attorneys, and we agreed to keep our split shark-free. By all accounts, we don't need a lawyer today. And that's when the coldness in my veins turns to dread. My memory latches on to the dinner party, to Charlotte shushing Spencer, to me realizing that Natalie and her sister have secrets. Big secrets. Maybe the lawyer they talked to was never the family law one. Maybe Natalie's making a case for something else. I stab the About Us section on the website, and that's when the knife slices through my back. The firm specializes in employment cases of class action, discrimination, whistleblowers, and sexual harassment. Natalie didn't hire an attorney to divorce me. She hired an attorney to sue me. Oh, shit, I mutter, with a palpable fear in my voice as I put two and two together, since I can only get them to add up to this, sexual harassment. That's why she hired an employment lawyer to make a claim. A reasonable claim. She'll have the text messages, too, the whole exchange about a boss falling for his employee. And that same employee lost other work because of that boss. She can't be suing the dojo. She doesn't have a contract with the dojo. She has a contract with me. My stomach plummets, and I silently curse myself. I did it again. I mixed business with pleasure. And this time, the results may be disastrous. This time, it's not my bad luck with women. The fault is 100% on me, and this is so much worse than a poisoned sandwich. I should have gone cold turkey on Natalie a long time ago. Chapter 33. I do my best to hide the rampant fear that races through me as we stop at Lila's on the way to the courthouse. I have half a mind to avoid Lila and Natalie, but after the trouble we had with this job before, I can't be a no-show. Besides, I might need Lila's money now more than ever. I couldn't be happier that Natalie and I are filing in 3 hours. I wish I could speed up the process. The clock ticks loudly in my ear with every passing second as we review the plans for the kitchen remodel. I'm focused as we talk, narrowing in on the job, not on the woman I just screwed who's going to try to screw me. I won't let her. I texted Chase that I need to talk to his cousin again, and I'm sure as soon as my buddy finishes removing a hairbrush from an eardrum or a thimble from a belly button, he'll ring me. "We should have it done in a few weeks," I say crisply. Tension winds in me so goddamn tight I might snap any second. "I'm so thrilled this worked out," Lila says, and drops a hand on Natalie's shoulder. "And this woman deserves all the credit? Getting to know her during the self-defense class helped me realize that I wanted this remodel to happen and how we could make it work. I was scared, but she encouraged me." My eyes widen to the size of the ocean. "Did she know?" Lila nods. "She has your back." "I bet she does," I say, and the picture comes into even clearer focus. Natalie must have worked her ass off to get this job for us, maybe to try to claim she's running my business, too. Fuckity, 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 what a sneaky little pussycat she is, slinking into everything, jumping into every goddamn bag. "Oh, Natalie, don't let me forget to show you the closet," Lila says with a bright smile. Natalie sets a hand on my arm. "Lila was raving about the closet here during a self-defense class last week, and I've been dying to see it." As Lila scurries her to the closet, all I can think is I'm an hour closer to ending this fucking union with the woman I just fucked. The mustached clerk with wire-rimmed glasses takes the papers, staples them together, and stamps them with the date. "These will be filed today, and we'll notify you in a few weeks when the annulment has been granted," he says, without raising his face. His one-note voice should grate on my ears, but it sounds like sweet music because I'm one step closer to slicing this woman out of my life. Natalie bounces on her toes. "Thank you so much," she says, and no one, not even Mr. Clean himself, could wipe the grin off her face. She's so happy to be splitting up, and it's irksome. Suspicious. Another piece of evidence against her. I tap my fingers against the worn wood of the clerk's counter. "How long does this take?" I ask bored man. "A few weeks," he drones. "But on average, is a few weeks 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, four?" Slowly, like it costs him something to lift his chin, he looks up. "A few weeks," he replies, which loosely translates to "shut the fuck up." But what is that generally speaking? He gives me a "you've got to be kidding me" stare. It's more than a day and less than many days. I sigh, but like a dog with a bone, I won't let up. "Can you ballpark, please?" Natalie grips my bicep. "Wyatt," she says gently, "he said a few weeks." "But I would like to know what a few weeks means," I say to her. She swallows and looks away from me. I turn back to the guy trying honey instead of vinegar. "I would be so grateful if you could give us a rough estimate. Just narrow it down a tiny bit more, pretty please." I fold my hands together, as if in prayer, hoping he gets that I'm pleading and that he'll show mercy. He parts his cracked lips once more. "Here's a rough estimate," he says, fixing on a simpering smile. "A few weeks." He shoves a copy of the papers at us, rings the silver bell at his stand, and calls out, "Next!" We walk along the hallway of the courthouse, heading to the exit. "Hey, want to tell me what that was all about?" Natalie asks. Dragging a hand through my hair, I mumble, "Just want this whole damn thing over." "Well, yeah," she says, rolling her eyes. "That's obvious." "Don't try to act like you don't feel the same," I spit out as we reach the exit. I push open the door, holding it for her. Manners still matter even when everything else falls apart. She walks into the bright sunlight of the Vegas afternoon, placing her hand above her eyes to shield them. "You wanted it," she says coldly. "You wanted this." I frown. "What?" "You made it clear from the start how much you wanted this, Wyatt," she says, and now her tone is exasperated. "With me." She tosses up her hands. "I thought you'd be happy. I thought this is what you wanted. Why aren't you happy?" "You think I should be happy?" I toss back at her, frustration bubbling up, rising to the surface. I'm waiting for her to strike. I need to be ready for her ambush.
"I thought we were going to date."
"You'd like that, wouldn't you?" There's way more vitriol in my tone than I intend. She backs away from me, holds up both palms in a clear, "Don't touch me," stares at me as if I'm someone she doesn't even know. Her blue eyes study me before she speaks. In them I see horror reflected at me. She's horrified at me.
"Why are you being so awful?" Her voice breaks. "I did this because you wanted it. You made me pro—"
Then she clasps her hand to her lips. Her words tickle something in the back of my mind. Faint words, and I strain to hear them. Bits and pieces play in my head, and they feel like mine. Like things I said to her the night we married, as a song played. Our song. Promise me, promise me, promise me. What the hell did I ask her to do? And now it's my turn to search her face. Her lip quivers, and her eyes are wet as if she's holding back tears. That ache I felt for days returns, burrows into me, as if the animal that carved that hole is trying to tell me something. That maybe Natalie's not the cause of my doubt. Perhaps she's the end of it. Rubbing a hand over my neck, I try to figure out what this moment means, and more importantly, what I believe to be true. Seeing her earnest eyes and her honest face, I don't know how she could possibly be planning to screw me over. I don't know how she could be stabbing me in the back. This woman, she's not like that. Call it a gut instinct. Call it a feeling. It's true. The question now is, can I listen to it? If I was burned before, does that mean I'll be burned again? A reel of images flickers in my mind. All our times together, right down to that moo on the plane. Even though that damning voicemail message made me want to run, my heart is telling me I've gotten it all wrong. My heart is telling me to stay. Just because I don't trust easily doesn't mean I shouldn't believe this woman. If there's anyone I should trust, it's Natalie. And if I don't try to fix this now, I'll lose her. That's a chance I can't take, proof or not. I go out on a limb. "Nat, I'm sorry," I say softly, reaching for her. "I'm just a mess right now. But I'm crazy about you, and I don't want this to end," I say. "And it's a start. It's the only start I can manage right now."
"I didn't either."
"Didn't." "But you do now?" I ask, my voice wavering.
"I don't like the way you just talked to me."
My heart sinks. Here on the steps of the courthouse, she's going up, I'm heading down. I reach for her arm, wrap my hand around it. "Is this how it ends?" My voice barely sounds like my own. Hers is a whisper, too.
"You tell me."
I want to ask about the voicemail, the call, the lawyer. I want to ask what I promised her. I want to know if I've fucked this up beyond repair. Most of all, I want to know if there's a chance of fixing it. But before I can speak again, she raises a hand.
"I can't talk to you right now. We can talk later, if you decide you can treat me the way you always have, not the way you just acted. And I really hope you can do that. But right now, I need a break. I've done something crazy and probably foolish. So I'm going to go and see Lila about her closet, because that will take my mind off the email you're about to receive."
She marches down the steps and hails a cab that takes her away from me. Chapter 34.
There's no email. I keep checking for whatever she's sending me between requesting an Uber and calling Lila to ask if she wants me to head over to work now. Her voice is sweet but firm. Why don't you take the afternoon off? I'm with Natalie and we've got a few things to do. In the background, I swear I can hear Natalie cry. The sound of it twists my chest. I wish I could comfort her, but I'm not the one she wants to be with right now. Okay, take good care of her, please. Of course, and come back later, Lila adds, then more softly. Sometimes a woman just needs a few minutes alone. Thank you. Even though my heart is torn by my own stupidity, a brief calm descends on me thanks to Lila's advice. The woman has always been good to us. She'll look out for Natalie while I figure out how to sort out the mess I made. I hang up and check my email again. Nothing. The whole afternoon looms ahead of me like a giant black hole. I want to work, to hammer, hang, and drill, not roam aimlessly around a city I barely know, all because I'm a pig-headed idiot. But as the driver swings onto the strip on his way to the Bellagio, I realize this isn't just a city I barely know. This is the city where I started this love affair with Natalie, and it's the city where I don't want us to end. I lean forward and ask the driver if we can change the destination. Sure thing, where to? Give me 1 minute to find the address, I say, doing a quick search on my phone. I find it, and he enters it in his GPS. 10 minutes later, I walk up to a small chapel, looking for a guy in a gold leisure suit. I want to ask Larry if he remembers my wedding, if he can help me figure out where I screwed up. It's a straw, but it's the one I'm grasping at. Once I enter the chapel, though, and hear the music, I'm whipped back in time to my wedding night, when Elvis crooned of how he couldn't help falling in love. And as that most romantic of romantic songs plays again, the notes somehow unlock the faint words that were tickling the back of my mind a mere hour ago. The drunken blur of my wedding ceremony is no longer a haze. It's clear, and I can hear everything I said after the vows. I stumble into a pew as the memory crashes into me like a tsunami. I stand at the altar, clasping her hands, looking into her eyes, as Elvis soundtracks our ceremony. You're beautiful, Nat, and every day when I see you at work, I think how much I love coming into the office and working with you. But it's not just because you're gorgeous. You make my business better. I grip her hands harder, holding tight, making sure she knows, even in my intoxicated state, that everything I say comes from my heart. You make the business fun, but you also make it really fucking good. Without you, it's nothing. She shakes her head, but she can't stop smiling. That's not true. You're so talented. Elvis sings about fools rushing in, and that word, fools, sticks with me. I don't want to be fooled again. I can't take that chance. No, it is true. You turned WH around, and I can't thank you enough. And I'm so fucking lucky that we get to keep working together. You want to, right? She nods, laughing. Of course. Why? You're not going to fire me tonight, are you? I sway closer, plant a sloppy kiss on her mouth, and tell her no. No, no, no. No fucking way am I firing you. But you've got to know that work is why we can't stay married. I've had the best time with you, and I want so much more, but we have to get an annulment in the morning. Her eyes are intensely serious, even as she hiccups. Duh, of course. Then, I thread my fingers more tightly through hers. This night has been incredible, and a part of me feels just like this song because I kinda can't help falling in love with you. Her eyes widen in surprise, and maybe even hope, but I power through with the rest of the unplanned thoughts that I've simply got to share now. But when that happens, Nat, I make mistakes and fuck up, and I screw myself over by being foolish and too trusting. I've gotten burned, so don't let that happen to me. I want us to keep working together. Don't you?
Yes, God, yes.
Then promise me something.
What is it?
Promise me we'll end this tomorrow, that you'll divorce me. I'll probably ask you to stay with me because I'm already crazy about you. I'll probably ask you a ton of times,
I'll try everything to convince you, but I need you to promise me, no matter how convincing I am, that we'll end the marriage. Because I can't mix business and pleasure. It's my Achilles heel, and I need you to help me. Promise me. Promise me. Promise me, I say, with a harsh swallow, and then I wait. But not for long. Her eyes are full of truth as she answers solemnly. I promise, Wyatt. I promise, and I get it. I do. I really do. I drop my forehead into my palm as everything snaps into 20/20 hindsight. That's why she stuck to her guns. Because I asked her to. Hell, I begged her to have my back for me. I made her swear she'd keep to the plan. I even said as much to her once again on the day I ripped up her check. I made you a promise, and I goddamn intend to stick to it, whether I had a few beers or not. I'm a man of his word, and I sure as hell expect the people I work with to treat me like it, and to act the same way. She held to the promise I asked her to keep. She protected me from me. But now I'm the one breaking other promises to her. Unspoken ones that came in the way we kissed, in the times we shared, in the way we were so good together. Gripping the pew in front of me, I stand up, nearly bumping into a man in a gold jumpsuit. Hey there. You looking to get married today, son? I don't answer him because my phone buzzes, and at last her email makes landfall. It's from her attorney, but she's copied on it, and the words are hers. With the fastest swipe in human history, I open the note and read the last thing I expected to see. Dear Wyatt, please accept this as my letter of resignation. I have loved every moment of working with you. It's been fun, challenging, and wildly productive. But I can't work with you if I want to be with you, and I do. I really want to be yours. So I'm going out on a limb and making the choice that will let us be together. I checked with an employment attorney to make sure I wasn't breaking my contract with you, and she said in certain circumstances, when you have a reasonable claim, you can terminate employment without giving 2 weeks' notice. Seeing as I'm in love with you, please accept this as my reasonable claim to leave my post at WH. Effective immediately. Love, Natalie. Boy. Did I ever fuck up? When I look up from the screen and meet Larry's expectant gaze, the question he just asked registers fully. And I know how to try to fix this mess I've made. Sometimes you just have to bet the house. Chapter 35. In my line of work, I've developed a specialty, the remodel. Giving a kitchen a thorough makeover is my key skill. I know which materials I need and the right tools to use, and I'm a master at meeting a deadline. This might be the toughest remodel I've ever attempted, though, given the wrecking ball I used on our union earlier today. But I quickly assemble a list of materials and then round them up, starting at the New York, New York Hotel. Once inside the doors, I run. Okay, not true. If I ran, security would likely tackle me. But I definitely trot. Through the casino, along the shops, up the escalator, and past the arcade, glancing longingly at the black curtain that hides the pinball machine. I don't go for the entrance. Instead, I head to the exit of the ride. A bunch of roller coaster riders pours out, windswept and hopped up on the adrenaline of a loop-de-loop upside-down trip. This is where Natalie and I had our first adventure, and as I arrive at the picture counter, I'm ready and determined to find the evidence of it. The original is safe and sound at my home. Thankfully, the same woman who worked that night is here today. The cheerful brunette with pigtails and red glasses, only today her hair is yanked into a high ponytail. "What can I do for you?" she flashes a friendly grin. I follow Chase's advice once more. Do the opposite of what I did earlier. Instead of spraying my frustration on her, as I did the clerk, I sprinkle sugar on my request. Hey there. About 2 months ago, I was here with the woman I've just realized I'm madly in love with. The brunette's eyes light up, and I continue, giving her the date and the approximate time. We had our photo taken, and our number was 16. If there's any chance you could find it and print me a copy, I'd be incredibly grateful and will happily pay double, triple, you name it. I need this picture, though, to show her how good we can be together. The brunette clasps both hands over her heart.
I love this city. Vegas is full of stories of love.
She straightens and adopts a serious demeanor. I will absolutely positively find it for you. 10 minutes later, I walk out of New York, New York, with a copy of Natalie and Me at the top of the roller coaster, riding high on our exhilaration in each other. Next, I pop into a drugstore on the corner, use my phone to search for a photo online, email it to myself, and print it out. I buy 2 frames. Then I stop at the Wynn, and 20 minutes later, I have all the materials I need for one hell of a redo. The only thing left is her. With a whole new fleet of nerves docking inside me, I call Natalie. Her phone rings and rings and rings, then her voicemail plays. A momentary bout of worry touches down as I wonder if she's avoiding me, but I shrug it off and dial Lila. Hi, Wyatt. Hey, I'm looking for Natalie. Is she around?
She is, but we're busy shopping. Give us a little bit longer, and I think she'll be ready.
Where are you? She laughs.
Oh, Wyatt. Natalie's just helping me with a few items I need to get organized, and she's having quite a good time here. Don't you worry. We'll see you soon.
And I grin as I hang up. Yes, you will.
I've got a feeling I know where the woman I want is, because I know her. I know what she loves.
She told me she could happily live here, that this is her favorite place in the universe. And since she's helping Lila with her closet, call me Sherlock, but I'm pretty damn sure I'll find Natalie inside this big box not too far from the strip. When the cab drops me off, I say a quick prayer to the universe that I can find her and take not only one step, but all the steps to fixing us. As the doors slide open, I scan the container store, hoping for a glimpse of blonde hair, a hint of strong legs, a flash of orange summer dress. That dress. My God, that dress. My mouth waters as I think about how she looked in it and why she was so goddamn happy today at the courthouse. Because she was giving me everything she thought I wanted. Because she loves me. She fucking loves me. I head down the aisle, swinging my gaze from side to side at the sea of Tupperware, hat boxes, cloth file cabinets, cat food containers, ornament holders, shower caddies, laundry baskets, pill holders in every size imaginable, hangers and garment bags, and at last I arrive in the land of closet organizers. Orange. I see orange, and it looks like happiness to me, like all my favorite memories and everything I want for my future. Her back is to me, and she holds a shoe drawer, showing it to Lila.
And then you use this on the middle shelf and it helps sort all your shoes, Natalie says, and her voice fills me with hope.
I hope I haven't lost her. I hope I can pull this off. I hope she doesn't think I'm crazy. Lila meets my eyes, her own lighting up, but she quickly schools her expression. Natalie must sense I'm here, though, because she spins around in a heartbeat, obviously surprised. And I stop thinking and hoping and wondering. I just do. I walk up to her and speak from the heart. It's not rocket science to tell her she's the one. I should have done a lot of things differently, Nat. I should have told you I love you first, because I do. I love you like crazy, and maybe sometimes it makes me crazy. One corner of her lips quirks up as if she's trying to rein in a smile. I shouldn't have filed for the annulment today. I shouldn't have been a dick to you on the steps outside the courthouse when you were simply doing the most ridiculous thing I ever asked you to do. And most of all, I should never have asked you to keep such an unfair promise the night we married.
It's okay, Wyatt, she says,
and her voice is feathery soft.
I kept it because it mattered to you.
I shake my head, pissed at myself again, but even more in love with this woman. Lila takes a few steps back, giving us space as I continue. I barely remembered our ceremony, let alone all those things I said to you. And that's no excuse, but it is true. I remember them now because I went back to the chapel this afternoon, and that song was playing. Can't Help Falling in Love. I know I felt it that night, and I feel it a million times more now. She moves closer to me, and that emboldens me. So does the expression on her face, soft and caring. Then the words she mouths, "Me too." I want to kiss her, but I have so much more to say. I'm not drunk now. I'm completely stone-cold sober, and I'm asking you for a second chance. I'm wildly, madly, insanely in love with you, and I brought this picture to remind you of how amazing we are together. Her eyes twinkle as I hand her the photo.
No, you didn't bring my O-face,
she says, mad but not mad. She's playful again, and I love that tone in her voice. I can't help but grin. It's much more than your O-face, sweetheart. This, I say, pointing to the picture in the cardboard frame. This is you and me. This is how we are together. I brought this to remind you that this is where we started, that night, on that ride, and I want this to be us. Her lips quiver and her eyes shine with the start of tears. I want us to keep riding the roller coaster. To get on it over and over again. To keep climbing and falling and flipping upside down, even if it makes us sick or crazy. I want to feel all the joy and exhilaration with you, the ups and downs, because loving you is some kind of wild ride, and I don't want it to stop. She presses her hands to my chest, gathering the fabric of my shirt. Her voice is laced with emotion, and she's on the edge of tears.
Wyatt, I only pushed the annulment because I promised I would. I did it because I love you, because I thought you wanted it, because I know how much promises matter to you. That's why I was crying in the hotel room earlier, because I knew I had to do it, but I didn't want to. And I do love you. I love you so much that I can't stay mad.
I run my hand down her bare arm, unable to resist touching her. Goose flesh rises in my wake. I breathe a sigh of relief. But I need to confess something. Before we left your room this morning, I saw that law firm name flash on your screen. The one who sent your letter later on. Her gaze turns quizzical.
You did?
I nod, take a gulp, and come clean. I freaked out and thought it meant something else, something bad. And that's why I was such a dick at the courthouse. But then I realized how ridiculous that was well before you even sent your email. Only this time, I didn't need to see the homeless guy eat the sandwich to know it was safe. Because I know you, and I know your heart. I just hope I haven't messed things up too badly because of how cold I was. Her grip on my shirt tightens. Her gaze is fierce and loving.
You haven't. Not at all, I swear.
Then she says with a playful cackle.
But I fully intend to prank you with a sandwich someday.
I laugh lightly. You better. But even if I screwed things up a little, I want to make them a lot right. Because this can be us. I tap the photo one more time. And we can be this couple, too, I say, drawing a fueling breath as I reach into the bag from the drugstore and take out a framed photo of two gibbons swinging on a branch in a tree. She laughs.
You want us to be
gibbons? I reach for her hand. Nat, did you know gibbons are one of the few animals who mate for life?
Along with termites, beavers, and swans, she adds with a happy shrug. I looked it up. It seemed like something you'd enjoy knowing.
My heart does a wild dance, because she wanted to know, and she wanted to share. I said I was asking for a second chance, and I meant it, I say, my gaze holding hers. But not just a dating chance. Not just a let's-go-to-dinner chance. I'm not betting a $5 chip on red. I get down on one knee, and her eyes widen. I was nervous before, but I'm not anymore. I've never been so sure of what I want and what I need. I'm going all in, and I'm asking you for a second chance at marriage. I want to go home to New York and live with you and share a life with you, and I want you to be my wife. Let's stay married. Hell, let's get married again. Let's renew our vows. Marry me over and over, every year. Let's make it our thing. Her eyes turn to moons, and her jaw falls open.
Oh, my God.
She gasps. I take out the gift I bought at the Wynn, at the fancy jewelry shop in the fanciest hotel. I open the blue velvet box and show her a 2-carat emerald-cut solitaire. Be my gibbon, I say with wild hope. She falls to her knees, throws her arms around me, and kisses me like she wants all the same things.
It's only been a few hours without kissing her, but hell, it's so damn good to do it again, to feel her lips on mine where they belong. When she breaks the kiss, she meets my gaze and says softly, sweetly, "I'll be your Gibbon. But don't you know, I already am?" The smile that is my greatest joy spreads across her beautiful face, and I can't believe how lucky I am. "Oh, and about that letter of resignation you sent me," I begin, tapping my chin. "I had another idea." "Tell me," she says, practically bouncing. But then she stops and her smile disappears as she looks at her watch. "Wyatt," she whispers in that soft kind of voice that pretends trouble. My heart speeds up. "What is it?"
"We need to go. The courthouse is closing. They're filing our annulment paperwork."
I grab her hand and tug her up. "I don't want this marriage to be annulled."
"I don't either."
Lila chimes in. "Let's take my car. It feels like something a fairy godmother would do." And you know, that pretty much describes her role in this story. We rush out of the store, slide into her sleek black car, and peel away. Chapter 36.
"Oh."
The clerk gives a double-shouldered shrug.
"I am just so, so sorry."
His tone tells me he's not sorry at all.
"You see," he says, tilting his head, "since you were in such a hurry, I took a second look at your paperwork. You'd been so thoughtful as to leave a note explaining that you'd tried to file with Easy Out Divorce, and..." He clears his throat as if he's prepping to deliver a punchline. "Since Easy Out Divorce is now a known scammer, the courts have a temporary offer that anyone who was scammed by Easy Out can get a special fast annulment. So I fast-tracked it for you. Isn't that swell?"
"You did?" I ask as my shoulders sag.
The clerk clasps his hands together. "It's with great pleasure that I tell you your annulment was granted today, and this marriage has been dissolved."
My heart sinks, but only for a second, because where there's a will, there's a way. "No problem," I say with a smile. This time, I'm practicing being a good guy, because good guys win. And this good guy knows there's more than one tool to fix something broken. I turn to Natalie. "Want to bet there's a city hall or someplace like that where we could get married again? Let's do it right. Do it now." Her eyebrows rise, and she asks the clerk where civil ceremonies are performed. He points up. "Sixth floor, Office of Civil Marriage Unions." He hands us the papers and calls out, "Next." After we snag a marriage license, ask Lila to be our witness, and confirm our early evening walk-in appointment, Natalie and I stand in front of a judge in his office chambers, and we get married again. This time it's simpler. This time we're sober. There's no 24-hour chapel or sort of Elvis impersonator. Just my wife and me, sealing our love once more. I don't ask her to undo it tomorrow because I want to be entangled with her forever when we say I do. Then, I kiss my bride in our second marriage, even though it's our first, legally. But who cares about technicalities when my lips are on hers? She tastes so lovely, and I'll never tire of kissing her. My head spins from the sweetness of her mouth, and my body lights up from this connection we share. "You're stuck with me now," I say when our lips separate. With her hands looped around my neck, she murmurs, "That's where I want to be." As we head down the steps of the courthouse into the sunset of this city, leaving Lila on her own, I flash back to the moment here earlier today, when we were falling apart. I reach for her arm, wrap my hand around it. "Hey, let's make this the end of us ending. What do you say to that?" She grips my hand.
"It had better be the end of breaking up."
I run my fingers along the back of her dress. "I guess it's not your annulment dress anymore." She gestures to the orange fabric.
"It's my wedding dress, and truth be told, I wore it today hoping something like this might happen."
"You're such a planner."
"That's why you need me."
"I do need you. And that's why I want to tell you my plan for rejecting your resignation." She loops her arms around my neck and says,
"Tell me, but make it fast because I'd really like to consummate our marriage."
It's safe to say my proposal floors her. She cries again, and they're tears of happiness. When we make it back to my room, I kiss them away, strip off all her clothes, then mine too. She's naked before me, and it occurs to me that we've only made love once before without our clothes on. We've always been rushing, risking, tempting fate. The last time we were chest to chest, skin to skin, was on our first wedding night a few months ago. And I don't care what the courts say about marriages being dissolved, not existing, never happening. We happened, and we're happening again, so I join her on the bed. When I enter her, we both groan. Electricity shoots through me. It feels like pure bliss as I sink into her, savoring the way we fit. She moans happily and meets my gaze. It's intense the way we look at each other, the way we want to look into each other's eyes. "Can we do this every night?" she asks in a sexy purr as she wraps those gorgeous legs around my ass. "Every morning, too," I say on a thrust, and we move together. "Want to know why?" "Why?" she asks as she arches her spine, her lips falling open. "Because I love fucking my wife," I say with a throaty groan, "and I fucking love my wife." I'm rewarded with a wild cry of pleasure, then another, and it doesn't take her long at all to fly high. Pretty soon I'm doing that thing she loves, coming loud and hard. I might even roar. I'd like to say we spend the night riding the roller coaster or the Ferris wheel, but nope, we go horizontal again, all night long. It's as perfect as a wedding night can be. And I'm not just saying that because we order an Oreo sundae from room service sometime in the middle of the night. But that is good, too. And I do like Oreos. Epilogue. The ladder rests against the bright white wall in our home. Natalie balances carefully on the top rung, hanging a sign. I suppose I could do this for her, but she insisted, and the woman really does love getting her hands on the tools. She's good with all of them, but she's particularly good with one of mine, if you get my drift. Anyway, here's the ladder. See what I did there? I didn't leave you hanging. I promised a dirty ladder story, and I'm going to deliver. She's on the ladder because she knows I like this view. Who am I kidding? I love this view. Perched on the edge of the couch in our living room, I savor the sight in front of me. My Natalie, in a little pink skirt that swishes around her thighs. Enjoying yourself? It's hard to tear myself away. She laughs, then raises the hammer and taps, taps, taps until the new sign is up on the wall. We have a matching one in our office. It says Hammer and Hammer Carpentry and Construction. We change the name. Yes, we, because it's ours. Everything is ours. I've learned you need to give a little in a relationship, or I should say give a lot. Natalie was willing to give up her livelihood for me. I couldn't let her do that. Instead, I found another solution. She stayed, and we run the business together as husband and wife. I still do the building. I'm the carpenter, after all. But she's the magic. She's the glue. She's made this business thrive, and it's hers as much as it's mine. We own it together. Sometimes she slings on a tool belt and helps finish a job, but we've expanded finally, and we have employees who are reliable and show up for work. Natalie manages it all. She makes it happen every day. "I've always loved this job. I never thought of myself as just an assistant," she'd said when I pitched her on my proposal after our official Vegas wedding. "You've always been so much more. You've made everything at our company better." "And I'll keep doing that. But I'm still teaching my classes at night," she'd said. I would expect nothing less from the woman who can kick my ass. Now she turns around, facing me, one hand holding onto the top rung as she shows me the sign. Our business, our marriage, us. "How does it look?" "Like it was meant to be. I love everything about it, especially the way those two names go together. She has my heart, my body, my business, my home. Sharing the business with her barely scratches the surface of all she has given me, this unconditional love. Oh, and obviously Natalie lives with me now, which means Josie's looking for a roommate, but but that's a story for another time. For now, I've got my woman to tend to. I walk over to the ladder, climb a step, push up her skirt, and pull her panties to the side. I kiss her and lick her and taste her until she's moaning and groaning and sighing sexily. That's my cue to keep her safe. Come on, take my hand, I say softly, and I guide her down the ladder, scoop her up, and set her on the couch, where she spreads her legs, and I devour her sweetness. Look, ladders are fun for foreplay, but when you're into risky sex, you've got to know which risks to take. Can't have my wife falling off a ladder because I make her come so hard. And that's precisely what I do as she goes wild on the couch against my mouth. Then I make love to her. Afterward, she smiles woozily at me and says, "Should we go get ready for our wedding?" Yeah, we're those people. We're the ones who got married in Vegas, came home, and threw another wedding party for our friends and family. We like marrying each other. A lot. So we're going to do it all again. Truth be told, we'll probably renew our vows next year. And the next. And the next. Another epilogue. A few months later. Once upon a time, there was a man, there was a woman, and there were some wild speed bumps on the road to their happily ever after. But we navigated them all. Along the way, I discovered that trust isn't about proof. It isn't about getting fooled or not getting fooled. It's a choice, one you make with your heart. Natalie has mine, and I had to learn that it was safe and sound in her care, always. Her heart is safe with me, too, even though she does like to beat me up in her videos. Her self-defense series has become quite popular online. New students have found her through them, and have started taking the classes she teaches a few nights a week. That makes her happy, and when she's happy, I'm happy too. She might have to cut back soon, though. Things are changing around here. Her belly is a little rounder. No, it wasn't an oops, baby. It didn't happen one drunken night. Please. My wife is a planner, and we planned this. In fact, the bun might very well have gone into her oven on our third wedding night. The one right here in New York. The two of us are the first of our friends to get knocked up, but that fits us. We seem to have two speeds, either stalled or moving at 60 miles an hour. We're not stalled anymore, so in this case, we broke all the limits, and in several months, we'll be a family. Right now, though, I'm heading out with Natalie to the farmer's market. We're not shopping for asparagus or arugula. We've always liked it risky, and today we're going to take our chances. We've got a date behind the banana stand. The end. This has been Well Hung, written by Lauren Blakely, narrated by Sebastian York, produced by Tyler Whitlatch. Copyright 2016.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.